The opportunity to hear a rather unusual work for choir and recorder, setting words by Hans Christian Andersen. So do join me, Alla Jones, and my guests this afternoon at 5 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Well, hello from me, John Shea. Welcome to this Sunday afternoon on BBC Radio 3. The early music show is in a couple of minutes, but now at 1 o'clock, the latest BBC news, read by David Cornett.
The Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, has said he's bitterly disappointed at the outcome of the Brussels summit. Britain has become the only country in the European Union to oppose a new treaty which is aimed at tackling the Eurozone debt crisis. But the Foreign Secretary, William Hague, insists that the UK will not become marginalised as a result of David Cameron's decision not to sign up to the deal. Hundreds of soldiers who've defected from the Syrian army are reportedly fighting government troops in the south of the country. It's described as one of the biggest armed confrontations since the start of the uprising against President Bashar al-Assad's rule. A new deal has been reached on climate change at the United Nations conference in South Africa. Delegates agreed an accord which compels the world's biggest polluters to take action on global warming by 2020. In a report out tomorrow, the city watchdog will be highly critical of its own role in the collapse of the Royal Bank of Scotland. The Financial Services Authority will say supervision was deficient in many areas. RBS needed a bailout of £45 billion from taxpayers. The former leader of Panama, Manuel Noriega, is being flown back there from France after he was declared fit to be extradited. He's facing a 20-year prison sentence for murdering political opponents. Police are to begin testing a laser gun which fires a blinding wall of light capable of stopping rioters. The Home Office says the effectiveness of traditional methods of crowd control, such as CS gas and tasers, are limited because of their short range. The first images have been revealed of the royal barge, which will carry the Queen along the Thames during her Diamond Jubilee celebrations in June. The 200-foot cruiser will be red and gold, with an interior described as sumptuous. And the weather, rain in northern England and Wales will become heavier as it moves eastwards. There'll be showers elsewhere, with snow in the Scottish Highlands. Temperatures this afternoon will reach 9 Celsius in Dover and 7 in Cardiff, but only 3 degrees in Perth. BBC News and Weather at 1:03.
From David Cornett. Our Sunday concert in an hour's time features Beethoven's string quartets played by the Belcher Quartet. That's at 2 o'clock. But now on Radio 3, it's time for the second of this weekend's editions of the Early Music Show, introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
One evening in the late 1760s, the great poet Pietro Metastasio set quill pen to paper. It wasn't another libretto or some elaborate verses he was engaged in, though, but a letter to his friend Carlo Maria Broschi, the man you and I may know better as the celebrated castrato singer Farinelli. The missive concerned their mutual colleague, the composer Nicola Porpora. "I could not resist the pity that our poor friend aroused in me yesterday," wrote Metastasio in the flickering candlelight of his study. "It is indeed a tearful thing to see a man of such merit in his profession being reduced to a real lack of daily bread. He is a man of distinction, he is a friend, he is old. We need not do much to avoid his death. Every impulse obliges us to succour him. Do so if you can. Your benefit will fall upon a person known all over Europe." It's clear discovered that their friend Porpora was in a desperate state. But how did a man who'd been so successful, one of Europe's best-loved composers, come to be reduced to such poverty? Nicola Porpora had been unquestionably one of the most famous musicians of his day. Composer, singing teacher and theatrical powerhouse, he was right in the heart of the action and is now viewed as an important link between Handel, who was his great adversary, and Haydn, who was one of his pupils. Born in Naples in 1686, the year after Handel, at just 10 years old, he was enrolled at one of the city's four music conservatories. His father, a bookseller, struggled to afford the tuition fees, but they were waived after just 3 years when Porpora earned his keep as a student teacher. At this time, the great operatic genius in Naples was Alessandro Scarlatti, who more or less monopolised the theatres. Nevertheless, with the support of two influential patrons, Porpora began to carve out a niche as an opera composer himself. And when Scarlatti left the city, Porpora was his natural successor. He was soon the most sought-after opera composer in town. The public adored him and he collaborated with some of the best in the business, including the young Metastasio, who wrote his first two librettos. And the starring role in one of Porpora's first operas went to a young singer who was just starting out, his most talented pupil, the 16-year-old Carlo Broschi. Thus began the career of one of the greatest castrato singers of all time, the one and only Farinelli.
Amore, più splendorato fa.
The aria Dall'amor più sventurato from Nicola Porpora's pasticcio Orfeo, written for his great friend and singing pupil Farinelli. As a much sought-after singing teacher, Porpora was a stickler for technique. His pupils had to learn absolute control of their voices and to master things like agility, dynamics and colouring through a regular and rigorous set of exercises. Along with Farinelli, many other starry names came through the door, like the soprano Regina Mingotti and castrati such as Caffarelli, Salimbeni and Antonio Uberto, who took the stage name of Porporino as a tribute to his illustrious master. But it was time for Porpora to spread his wings outside his native Naples. Two of his operas were produced in Rome, and encouraged by all this, he travelled to Germany and to Austria, finally settling in Venice, where he took the post of choirmaster at the Ospedale degli Incurabili, a similar sort of music school to the one where Vivaldi famously worked, just down the road. Of course, in Venice at this time, the competition for an opera composer was really fierce. Porpora's main rival was the German-born Josef Hasser, some 13 years his junior, who in fact had originally been one of his own pupils back in Naples. The young fellow was already doing extremely well for himself. He swanned around Venice in the company of the great and the good, and he popped back and forth to Saxony, where he also had a plum job at the Elector's court. As you can imagine, the two composers frequently locked horns. And the following year, Porpora received a fabulous job, which must have got right up Hasser's nose. It was a huge honour, a commission from the Vatican, no less, to write a special cantata to be performed on Christmas Eve in the presence of the Pope and his guests. The result was Dorinda Dormi Ancor, a cantata about two shepherds, Montano and his son Dorindo, who are coaxed by a choir of heavenly angels to leave their flock and take gifts to the infant Jesus. This is the opening sinfonia.
Thank you.
Opening symphonia from Porpora's Christmas Eve cantata Dorindo Dormi Ancor, a commission from Pope Clement XII in 1732. Of course, getting on in the opera world has traditionally been as much about politics as about great music. And in England, the scene in the first half of the 1700s had both of those in spades. A group of English nobles had got together to set up a new opera company in the capital, to be in direct competition with Handel's company, currently in residence at the King's Theatre in the Haymarket. In fact, you can still see the plaque on the wall there, where the original theatre stood, not far from Pall Mall. This new company was to be called the Opera of the Nobility, and its home was further east, towards the City of London in Lincoln's Inn Fields. Porpora was invited to become the new director. He didn't need much persuading. He promptly resigned from his teaching job in Venice and arrived in London to prepare for his first season in the winter of 1733. The promoters pulled out all the stops to outdo their rivals. What's more, they had a trump card up their sleeve in the form of the greatest crowd puller of the time, the temperamental Italian castrato Senesino. He'd been the star draw in Handel's company for more than 12 years. But his relationship with his boss had always been pretty difficult. And now, having quarrelled once again with Handel, he was only too keen to decamp to Porpora's court and to take on the starring role in his new opera, Arianna in Nassau. Another person can come into my sight, but you alone are the adored image which is impressed in my heart. Un altro oggetto puo, from Porpora's opera Arianna in Nassau, first given in London in 1733, with the great Senesino in the role of Teseo. And that performance was by the contralto Anna Maria Di Micco with the Orchestra Sinfonica di Savona, directed by Massimiliano Carraro. In London, Porpora was kept busy. Four more operas followed, an oratorio and a serenata, although none quite seemed to match up to the huge success of that first one, Arianna. But it was here that he also produced a set of 12 cantatas that are now considered to be his greatest masterpieces. Scored for soprano and continuo, they were published in a very elegant edition, paid for by Frederick, Prince of Wales. His Royal Highness evidently saw in the collection a fitting monument to his patronage. After all, the combination of libretti by the great Metastasio with music by such a refined avant-garde composer as Porpora surely epitomised everything he wanted to project about his own tastes as champion of the very finest culture. He couldn't have done much better. Porpora's cantatas are elegantly melodic, with a kind of skillful vocal lines that could only have come from the pen of someone who had the utmost understanding of the art of singing.
Ad allettare con tuo lusinghe male, che stolto è il tuo piacere.
soprano Elena Cecchifedi with Auser Musici, directed by Daniele Boccaccio, with Porpora's cantata O Sima Veggio O Amore, published with the financial support of the Prince of Wales, who then commissioned a serenata for his own wedding. So Prince Frederick was certainly one of Porpora's biggest fans, but as things turned out, the opera of the nobility was to fail. Even the draw of Farinelli making his London debut in Polifemo wasn't enough to tip Handel's rival company off their pedestal. In fact, Farinelli's appearance in the production only managed to keep the opera of the nobility going for just a few more months before they finally went bankrupt. The following summer, Porpora returned to Venice, and indeed shortly after, both his company and Handel's collapsed due to lack of support. The great age of the Italian opera in London appeared to be over. Perhaps he thought he'd be able to pick up where he left off, but Venice had moved on. The next few years of Porpora's life were fraught with stressful job applications as he travelled between one city and another, searching for a permanent appointment. What's more, wherever he went, his young rival, the dreaded Hasse, seemed to have got there first. Eventually, he headed north to Dresden to become a singing teacher to the Electoral Princess of Saxony. Little did he know that his old rivalry with Hasse would shortly reach a very ungentlemanly climax. The argument in question, wouldn't you know it, was all about leading ladies. Porpora had introduced his latest protégé, the soprano Regina Mingotti, into several of his new opera productions. The trouble was, Hasse's wife, Faustina Bordoni, was also a singer, a very famous one at that, and she was not at all amused at being upstaged in this way. Hasse scornfully referred to Miss Mingotti as Porpora's last stake, the only twig he had to catch at, and he now used his considerable power and influence to get Porpora pensioned off, in other words, sacked. Porpora was 66 years old, and it wasn't a very dignified way to bow out of a much-coveted job.
Thank you.
the first movement from Porpora's Salve Regina. Michele Andalo, the countertenor, with Cappella Teentina, directed by Saverio Via. Well, with his ex-pupil appointed over his head, the humiliated Porpora retreated to Vienna, where his close friend Metastasio now provided him with a room big enough to take pupils to supplement his pension. In that very same house lived another musician, and one who would soon become one of the greatest musical names Europe had ever known, Joseph Haydn. It must have been quite a noisy household, because Haydn also had a teaching practice there, giving piano lessons. A convenient arrangement was hatched. Haydn would accompany Porpora's singing pupils and act as his valet, and in return, Porpora would give him an entree to the fashionable salons of Viennese society, where he could mix with composers such as Gluck and Wagenseil. It should have been the dream deal, but unfortunately it seems the increasingly bitter old Porpora treated the young musician very shabbily. He was scolded like an ass, he later wrote, and frequently poked in the ribs. But Haydn bore it all with equanimity and claimed that he owed the old man quite a debt when it came to learning about singing and the fundamentals of composition. Almost certainly Haydn would have known Porpora's 12 violin sonatas, which were published around this time, one of his very few surviving collections of chamber music. This is number 2 of the set in G major, performed by the violinist Anton Steck with Christian Rieger at the pedal harpsichord.
Thank you.
violinist Anton Steck with Christian Rieger at the harpsichord playing Nicola Porpora's Violin Sonata No. 2 in G major, written in Vienna in 1754. Porpora's time in Vienna was reasonably productive, but when Saxony was invaded during the Seven Years' War, his pension from Dresden was stopped and what little finances he had dried up. There was nothing for it but to return once again to Naples. Now 74 years old and frail and with no family to look after him, he lived in abject poverty, giving lessons wherever he could. In fact, one of his last pupils reported that the old composer kept so miserable a table that he was frequently driven out of the house by hunger to seek a dinner elsewhere. It was during these last few years that Metastasio wrote that rather sad letter to Farinelli that we heard at the beginning of the programme. But it seems to have been too late. And on March the 3rd, 1768, Porpora, now aged 81, died lonely and penniless. It was an awful come-down for a man who had played such a big part in European musical life for more than 60 years. Porpora had crossed paths with some of the biggest names of his day, Scarlatti, Handel, Hasser and Haydn, great singers like Farinelli and Senesino, and the poet Metastasio, not to mention the countless members of European royalty and nobility who'd employed him. In the end, though, it took the intervention of a musicians' welfare association to allow Porpora's body to be interred at the Ecce Homo Chapel in Naples, where some local musicians banded together to perform at his funeral.
third lesson from Nicola Porpora's third Notturno per I Defunti. The singer was the contralto Romina Basso with Dolce e Tempesta, directed by Stefano De Micheli. And that ends today's edition of the Early Music Show, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Manchester by Les Pratt.
How are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine.
New York, capital of tap.
How are you? I'm fine.
This week's Between the Ears on Radio 3 brings you three remarkable musicians who blend European and African-American traditions in tap. A city that absorbs the rhythms of the world through its feet and a remarkable soundtrack to modern urban life. Between the Ears, Tap City. Saturday night at 9:30 on BBC Radio 3.
It's now a little after 2 o'clock and time for the Sunday concert, which was recorded last week. It's introduced by Petroc Trelawney.
A warm welcome to London's Wigmore Hall, where the acclaimed Belcher Quartet are about to perform Beethoven. The quartet is dedicating this season to a complete cycle of Beethoven's quartets, here in London, but also in Liverpool, Gateshead, Snape and Hamburg. Each programme will consist of an early, middle and late quartet. Today, the last of the Opus 18 set, written when Beethoven was in his late 20s. That'll be followed by the austere, terse, Serioso Quartet, Opus 95, composed a decade later. And we'll finish with a product of his mid-50s, the E-flat Quartet, Opus 127. Beethoven had first been commissioned to write a quartet in 1795, but it wasn't until several years later that he finally composed one. Perhaps he was a little wary of contributing to a medium which Haydn had made so much his own. Mozart also provided something of an inspiration. "Now that's what I call a work," Beethoven told his pupil Carl Czerny one day when they were looking at Mozart's A major quartet, K464. And yet, despite these influences, Beethoven's six Opus 18 quartets already placed the composer in a very different musical world to that of his predecessors. Well, tonight, number six, Beethoven gave the work a title, Malinconia, Melancholy, after the last movement, the finale unusually beginning with a tragic, slow introduction. I've been talking about the works with the Belcher's viola player, Krzysztof Hojalski.
The Opus 18s are already very much in the new spirit in the sense that it's very democratic. The writing for all four instruments is very democratic. Extremely brilliant. I mean, the Opus 18 number 6 is a particular example of fantastic, sort of opera buffa style clarity and brilliance. And there's also the dark side, which is astonishing. I mean, the certain moments of it, hints of it already in the slow movement, but then it's really fully unleashed in the La Malinconia, which is absolutely extraordinary. In some ways, perhaps the most forward-looking moment in tonight's program. Quite innocent, apparently innocent quartet that has a moment of absolute madness and horror.
Krzysztof Hojalski, and here are the Belcher quartets making their way onto the stage of a packed Wigmore Hall to open this concert with Beethoven's string quartet in B-flat, Opus 18, number 6.
Thank you.